Hey, Raymond here from the Beginner Photography Podcast. Today, we got a great interview, another community spotlight interview with our very own John Kenny. So you probably know the name John Kenny if you're in the Facebook group at all. He's been in there for quite a while, more than a year, and he has been, ever since he got in, he's just been actively being a very helpful member of the community, as well as sharing a lot of his own photos as well. So today, this is a great interview. You also may know him from his photos of cheesecake, which I just get so excited for. It's a little bit ridiculous, but they just look so delicious. And he's the reason why I implemented a very strict no posting photos of pastries unless you send them to me first for quality control, you know, taste test them, make sure that they're okay for everybody in the group. We can't have any damaged goods in the group. So I know that you're really going to enjoy this episode here today with John. We talk a lot about, you know, John is very open about the things that he shares and his experiences that he's been through, including his very first photo shoot and how it went pretty wrong and what he did to fix the situation. So I really hope that you are going to enjoy this episode today with John. And if you're listening and thinking to yourself, I really wish that I was part of a fun and supportive community of other like-minded and newer photographers, then I encourage you to join the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook community, as it's full of them. You know, we understand that everybody's at a different point in our journey in photography, and, you know, we're not going to put anybody down for that reason, you know, and we're very open and willing to help as much as we can, because everybody knows something that you don't. And if you come at the world with that perspective, then, you know, of curiosity, then there's nothing but good things that can be ahead of you. So again, I really hope that you enjoy this interview today with John and his curiosities and his openness and willing to talk about, you know, everything that he's been through, as well as that he doesn't know anything. That he doesn't know everything, rather. He definitely does not know. I can't even do the double negative there. But he's a fantastic photographer, and I know that you're going to get a lot out of this one. So let's go ahead and get on into this community spotlight interview with John Kenny. My first question for you here, John, is tell me who you are, where you're from, and what it is that you do.
I'm John Kenny. I'm a photographer based over in England, actually pretty rural up in the north, Yorkshire, which is up on the east coast of England near the town of Whitby, which is famous for vampires, pretty much.
Oh, really? Vampires?
It was the setting of the Bram Stoker book where Dracula comes over to England, I think. The ship crashes at Whitby, I think. So okay. It's quite a photogenic spot, which means that I'm always missing. When you see pictures of people photographing street photography or nice neon lights, that's what I want to photograph, whereas probably everyone else wants to photograph nice historic buildings.
No kidding. Yeah, whenever it comes to, like, visiting new places, that's always what I want to do. It's just like, I take that back. That's what I see everybody else doing is, you know, photographing the big buildings and, like, look, here we are. I think back one time I went to New York and everybody got... Everywhere where I would look, people would be taking pictures of, like, the Empire State Building and, you know, like, the Statue of Liberty and, like, all those just, like, normal touristy things. And here I am just, like, look at the light on that window right there. Like, let me take a picture of that. My wife, she didn't get it. She's like, what are you taking pictures of? So I'm right there with you. So tell me how you got into photography in the first place. Like, where did it all begin for you?
I bought a... forgive me if I pronounce this wrong, because everyone seems to say it differently, a Nikon D3200 back in 2016. I hadn't had an interest in photography really before that. There's no like family history or any interest in at a young age in film photography or darkrooms. We've always kept family photo albums, but and then you have a look at them every so often, which is great. And I think it's probably the most important possession we have as a family, really, a history of family photo albums. But I was really keen to try and take some good pictures, or better standard of pictures for a once in a lifetime sort of holiday to Thailand that I was going on with my girlfriend and meeting my younger brother and his fiance over there. He was on holiday from Korea at the time, so it was seemed like a good time to actually invest in it and try and learn how to take better pictures, really. But I didn't. The reason I chose the Nikon D3200 was the sort of like tutorial mode it has built in to sort of explain the different modes and like how different thing works. So it seemed like a good starter camera. I just took it on holiday, took lots of terrible photos. if I'd known how to shoot in manual, I think I probably would have got some better ones. But with a lot of it's probably something you don't realize until you start taking photographs, that direct sunlight isn't a good thing,
right?
Or like no shade, just bright sunshine everywhere. It was looking back, I still got some good pictures I was happy with, but there was definitely plenty of room for improvement. Yes, that's how it started. After that, sort of, that was 2016. I didn't really do a lot with it in 2017, and then 2018 sort of took it back up again as a just an excuse to be outside, really, to go out into the local landscape when I wasn't at work, and just to be outside. That was it, really. That was what got me started. It was the idea of being out and able to take landscape pictures in all weather rather than people.
Right.
And since then, it's sort of evolved more into trying to get pictures of people with the, obviously, the lockdown last year over here in the UK. Business was shut for a long time. So I had a lot more time to invest into learning, which is when I found the podcast. So I think it was like, probably March time last year, I think, that I started listening to it. And then obviously joined the Facebook group not long afterwards, which has been one of the best sources of information, I've got to say, that I found out there. Probably this, the podcast and B&H's videos on YouTube, I think.
I love to hear that. That makes me happy. I'd love to hear, you know, that intro, because I think that it's not uncommon for a lot of photographers to get into photography kind of in a very similar way. There's some sort of life event, whether it be a child or a big trip coming up, you know, that you just want to be able to take better photos. I'm always interested, like, so this would have been 2016. So were you into like cell phone photography or anything like that at the time? Like, what was the motivation behind purchasing the camera itself? Let me rephrase. I know that you said, you know, you wanted better image quality from, you know, taking this trip, but like, why?
I think it was probably the camera or the phone that I was using at the time probably wasn't that good as far as camera goes, and also I like the idea of having more buttons to play with. I think more technology, more toys. So it was kind of appealing at that time. I hadn't really seen anyone using a DSLR or mirrorless or been to any photography clubs or anything like that. I didn't know anyone that used one, but I'd seen tourists obviously moving around the local town and other places with big cameras. We have, before COVID, there used to be, and there probably will be again, what's called a goth weekend, because of the history and the legends associated with the town. There's like a couple of weekends a year where basically the place is just full of people in fancy dress, steampunks, goths, that sort of thing. And I've seen photographers walking around, getting loads of great portraits, seeing pictures on Facebook and that sort of thing. So to me, it seemed to get better pictures, better quality pictures, I needed a better camera, or at least, it turns out, better control over the camera that I had.
yeah, of course. So you got the camera, you went to Thailand, You said that there's a lot of so-so photos. You got some good photos. Looking back, was the only difficulty for you just the lighting itself, or was there anything else from a technical perspective? Hey, Raymond here. If you're sometimes baffled by which camera settings to use, then I've got just the thing for you. My free guide, Picture Perfect Camera Settings. It's a fantastic starting point for anybody eager to understand the basics of camera settings in various shooting scenarios. And it's tailored to beginners who want to get out of auto mode, providing clear, easy-to-follow suggestions on where to start with your settings. So whether you're capturing a stunning landscape or a family portrait, Picture Perfect Camera Settings will help you to get off of automatic mode and explore the possibilities your camera offers. Remember, mastering photography settings is a journey, and this guide is your first step and the perfect resource to guide you towards finding the right settings for your style. So grab your copy today at perfectcamerasettings.com and start your journey to better photos.
I think I was pretty much shooting in auto all the time, so the camera was doing a good job of trying its best. Composition obviously could always be stronger, but it's not. I've never even looked at composition. I've never studied art or anything like that prior to getting the camera. I thought probably as everyone does, you buy the camera and then you'll get great pictures
right away. Yeah, right. Yeah. Out of the box.
Yeah, without any effort whatsoever.
Yeah. I know. I wish that was the case. I truly do. That would make my job so much easier. So obviously at that point, you know, I think you said that you put the camera down for an entire year and that you didn't pick it up again until 2018. Yeah. At that point, did you decide like, you know what, I'm going to take this seriously? Or once again, you're just getting outside, shooting an auto, just having a go at it? Oh, sorry about that. I swore that I turned this off. Oh, of course. Spam. Okay. Sorry about that.
Technology is rebelling today.
It is. I'll tell you what. First the camera and now the phone.
I think you did that deliberately just to take my nerves off things.
You got me. Yeah. I'm definitely a pro. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Go on.
I think it wasn't like 2016, then I came back from the holiday. I think in my head I had associated having a camera with only taking it out on special occasions, not using it all the time. So I did take pictures in 2017, but it was mainly family events. There's some terrible white balance mistakes, I think.
Oh, always, yeah, of course.
But the so I've still kept all the pictures, obviously. I wasn't using Lightroom, so everything's a bit chaotic as far as finding anything goes before then. 2018, I went on a holiday with a friend, so I took the camera along there and sort of tried a bit more seriously to be using the camera, so a bit more challenging in different lighting situations, trying to use it in manual, that sort of thing. But still, it was more a case of using trial and error rather than any sort of attempt to learn how to use it properly. Then sort of like coming on to 2019, I had a holiday in Germany booked, and that was it was like short 2 weeks sort of thing, going around a few different cities in the Black Forest, just me and a friend. And it was the first time sort of I'd had the opportunity to take the camera out without any problems and use it basically all day. So from before sunrise till after sunrise. So it was just like 2 weeks of being able to use the camera as much as I wanted when I wanted. So it was like a real opportunity to review the images as I went along and sort of know what I needed to do to improve and then have the opportunity to work on it again the next day.
I'm sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say that was like from then on, I tried to, even when I came back, I was using it more often, trying to learn how to do new things, that sort of thing.
Was it that trip that got you? I guess what I'm trying to figure out here is that, you know, you got the camera, you took a few photos, so-so, kind of took a year off, got back into it. At what point did it become like, really serious for you. Does that question make sense?
Kind of. I don't have a family or anything, so sometimes I have a bit of spare time on my hands, and I've always felt that I need to be doing something productive with spare time. So if the camera being there meant I had that opportunity, so it was like being able to learn effectively how to create something, or how to see something and then record it. This is where it becomes difficult to articulate these things, really.
Right, of course.
I still hadn't watched or studied any other photographers or anything like that. I don't think I even had an Instagram account at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I was a bit slow with social media. I forgot where I was going with that.
You know, really, it's. I feel like a lot of times we either, you know, the kind of what's the word here that I'm looking for? The generalization is that you grow up being interested in photography and you just think that you're just going to follow that for your whole life. Or, again, something happens and you take a photo that you realize, wait, there's something here. Like, I can keep going with this. Because today, you're making a go at turning this into a business, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So was there a single photo that you had ever taken that you looked at and first thought to yourself, wow, this means something to me. I can really make a go at this.
It's strange that, really, because I first had the thought that one of the pictures I sent you for the request, like the 5 or 6 images that mm-hmm. are important to me, one of those is one of the first prints that I sold. Not for any great deal of money, but it's the first time I thought, wow, if someone wants to pay to have one of my photographs in their home, then there must be some quality or something in the work. So I set up a website with the intention of selling landscape photos, and then quickly realized that people are more interested in learning about landscape photography than buying landscape photography. unless you're really really good at it, I suppose, or you're able to really, I wouldn't say visit stony locations, but you can, you're actually talented enough to be able to capture a feeling or a mood in a place. Then it's probably a very difficult thing to make a living on just selling prints, or to build that into any kind of business, I think.
And was that the first photo that you sold? Was that a landscape photo?
Yeah. I think it was on my, it was either the D3200 still or D7200.
Mm-hmm.
It was basically a shot where I'd done a long exposure with a sea scene and then some light trails leading through it. So it was the first time that I sort of envisioned a scene and then actually been able to go out and execute it.
Yeah,
and have it actually come out how I pictured it, I think. So that's why it was like an important image to me, because it was a sort of progression.
Right.
But then after realizing that the landscape thing wasn't really going to be a viable option, and having a lot of time with business lockdowns and what have you last year, it was more about trying to push myself to try and learn new skills. So I thought the using off-camera flash would be a good way to go, and then to really try and work on portraits, and then decide to try and build a business starting this year based around headshots and portrait photography.
Headshots and portraits. I wanna pause for a moment and go back to talking about the pre-visualization, right? Mm-hmm. Getting the photo that you saw in your head and finally being able to capture it. What do you think was holding you back before that photo itself?
I think it was probably a case of, I would go out somewhere without a plan, really. Take whatever gear I had, all of the gear, because I think that's probably what everyone does when you're starting out. You take, yes, you don't know what you're going to use. So you might only have like three lenses or something, but you take them all.
You're
going to
take them all, yeah.
Yeah, just in case. I didn't have a loaded kit, but it was certainly heavy enough. So it was. I knew that the angle that I wanted, the position that I need to be in, the time of day that I needed to be there. And then it was just a case of more luck than anything, really, working out the shutter time to get the light trails how I wanted them.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was like a really big motivating factor when that was when I was able to pull that off. And then I started planning a little bit more when I was going out, so I would know
going forward.
Yeah, I would mm-hmm. know where I would need to be, or what the location would work, that sort of thing. Sort of, I suppose, seeing things more as a photographer rather than just like seeing something nice and taking a picture without thinking about it, like just taking a quick snap. So there was a little bit more planning and intent, I think. That's when things started to change, really.
So now that you're doing headshots, how are you using pre-visualization to help you get the best photos that you can with that?
It's more of a challenge, and it's not really. So with the corporate headshot sort of thing, it's more, I've practiced the lighting on myself. So the actual, I can visualize how the light is going to be, or what lighting I'm going to need, or how it's going to be set up. It's a fairly simple setup. So mm-hmm. now the challenge is actually speaking to people in a short space of time, maybe 10, 15 minutes to try and get some acceptable images that they would like. So it was a bit of a rocky start, to be honest. But
well, tell me about that. What does that mean? How so?
Well, the first job I had, I had to be up at these offices up in Northumberland, which is a bit further north. And there was a yellow warning of snow and ice that day. So I had to, obviously I thought, there's no way I can cancel the first job because there's a warning. I'm going to have to make it even though. So it wasn't too bad. There was a fair bit of snow, but fortunately no problems getting there. So I thought I had everything that I needed. I didn't have a white backdrop. All I had was a collapsible black background that I bought off Facebook because mm-hmm. someone else had decided that photography wasn't for them, I assume. and I was a little bit naive, and I didn't realize that they would obviously not want a black background for headshots. They wanted white. So yeah. There was that wasn't great to start with. Fortunately, they had white walls, so I could work with that. So I spent nearly all day there taking photographs, set up a private gallery on my website for them to have a look at. The pictures to me were all fine, like the exposure and everything was right. But the customer said they didn't feel that it represented them. They felt that they all looked a little bit too wooden.
Oh, wow.
Which was little bit difficult because I thought obviously the technical aspect, if you get that wrong, that's your own fault.
Sure.
There's no one else you can blame for that. But I thought, well, it's quite a difficult thing to say to someone, does this look like you, or are you happy with that? Or you think you take the picture of someone, get the lighting right, that's the picture of them. So that was really
difficult, I assume, to get that sort of feedback.
Yeah, yeah. fortunately, I said to them, I'll come and do the photographs again. Mm-hmm. And they were happy with that. I came out again, invested in a white background this time, and went and did them again. And I think it sort of helped having been there before. So it was a lot easier to speak to people and build rapport. And then I don't have a shoot tethered, so it was more a case of like having a look at the back of the screen, then saying to them, you know, does this, how do you think this works? Do you think we should try looking this way, a tilt that way, that sort of thing? So trying to be more collaborative and then spending more time speaking to people rather than, because I was new and it was the first job, worry more about the technical aspect of the lights and all that side of things.
Yeah, and, yeah. So what have you learned now going forward, I guess? Like, is it, I mean, I know that you said it's all about, you know, the communication and trying to be more collaborative, but is it that simple? Or is there, like, is there anything specifically that you're doing or asking or the way that you're introducing yourself or a shot list or something that that you're going for to ensure that you can get what it is that you need?
Yeah, I think I actually got advice from a few people in the group. So got some great tips on making sure that things, there's an understanding before actually visiting the place. So we know what sort of pictures the customer's after, what sort of aesthetic they're looking for. And then just spending a bit more time trying to put people at ease, because nobody likes having the camera pointed at them, really.
Yeah.
I think that's where you get like 90% of the time. I don't like having my picture taken, or I don't look good in photos. So it's remembering that nobody's very at ease in front of the camera. So I spent a fair bit of time taking self-portraits, like just to try and practice it and get a feeling of what it's like to be in front of a camera, which is not quite the same, but the best I could do at the time. Mm-hmm. And then looking at other portrait photographers' work and videos and whatever was available on YouTube, really. And obviously the information from podcasts and what have you. So just managed to pick up enough information to go back and do a good job the second time. I've done three so far, three jobs. So I've still got plenty to learn. So there's probably something really, really important that I'm missing as far as it goes. But
you'll learn that after your next session.
Yeah. I think the thing at the moment really is just to keep trying to get people in front of the camera, really. As many people as possible with as many different faces as possible, just to get practice learning how to speak to different people and how different light works, different qualities of light, that sort of thing. Every time with each step that you go through with photography, you realize how much more there is that you need to learn before you can move on to the next part. So it's like one long video game.
One long video game. I've never heard it described like that. That's good. You're absolutely right.
You've got to keep building your supplies and your kit. Not literally, but like your knowledge. You're definitely not the kit. The kit doesn't matter as much. It's just the knowledge that you need. As long as you keep building your knowledge as you're going along, then you should be able to progress, really. I don't know if you get BBC programs straight away over there, or if there's a...
I'm not sure. We cut the cord a long time ago, so I don't watch much TV. So please tell me what you were going to say.
There's a four-part TV series called The Great British Photography Challenge with photographer Dave Rankin.
Oh, yeah.
Where they've got six photographers from different genres, not complete amateurs. They're obviously people who know how to use a camera. Mm-hmm. And they're doing different challenges as they go along. So it's been quite useful learning tool, watching how different people deal with different situations, like being challenged to get a good photograph with a smartphone, that sort of thing.
Right. What for you, is there something that you learned from the show that you are either going to or are now implementing in the way that you conduct a session?
I think it's more yeah. It's the communication, really. I think that's the key bit, because everyone can learn the technical skills of something, but being able to speak to someone put people at ease, direct people. That seems to be what separates good photographers from great photographers, or great photographers from good photographers, I suppose. Yeah. It's like that extra vision or bit of skill that you can't really teach. It's something you either develop or you don't, I would think. Other photographers that I've seen do similar things that take great photographs. Obviously, there's Platon, who I'd never heard of until that Netflix show that someone mentioned.
Oh yeah, yeah. Is it the design or the art of?
Yeah, something like that. The series, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That was really insightful. Yeah.
If you go on, I believe. No, it's actually Rankin's Instagram page. He did a whole like hour and a half long interview with him and Platon, and I thought I watched it. I've never stared at my phone like as long as I did to watch that entire interview. But it was fascinating to watch. I had actually reached out to Rankin to see if he would be interested in coming on the podcast. But now that you mentioned that, I remember he said no because he was getting ready to do that show. So. Is it over now? Should I reach back out to him and see if I can get him on?
Yeah, it's finished four parts. So yeah, I'm pretty sure it's finished. Yeah,
and he's like photographed the Queen. He's like royalty over there.
Yeah, when I got into photography, I never looked at other photographers' work or anything. Didn't really know anyone as such that took good photographs. Didn't look at anyone's work. So. Which probably sounds a bit weird. It wasn't a deliberate artistic choice not to look at social media. It's just I wasn't aware of it. So the internet up here was terrible. So it wasn't something that we'd be widely using. I think we only got more than 1.9 megabytes of download speed probably about 3 years ago.
Oh my gosh! Back to 2006.
Everything before that, it just wouldn't, nothing would happen. You'd be wasting your time, really.
Wow.
But since then, so seeing, obviously follow different photographers and different pages on Instagram, but a lot of the people whose work is maybe the most famous don't really, there's not really any presence on Instagram. It's like you'd have to go, you need to know who you're looking for before you can go and find it, sort of thing.
Right. Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, so watching that show with how he works, and not how I would expect. I suppose you'd have the idea that somebody who works in that industry at that level would be maybe not as shouty as Gordon Ramsay, but... That sort of thing. So seeing like how quiet Platon was in that Netflix documentary, more interested in the person, like asking questions, more empathy, that side of things. And it's a similar thing. There's another photographer who I was hoping to do a workshop with last year that got obviously cancelled, called Rory Lewis. I don't know if you've heard of him as well.
I'm not familiar.
He's celebrity and royal portrait photographer. He's done a lot of work with the photographing the British and Italian armies and celebrities. So he does actors' headshots as well as portraits. And I watched an interview with him by the British Journal of Photography.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really interesting, like, to see where he gets his influences from, and like Renaissance art, that sort of thing, rather than other photography. So it was just like a different piece of the toolkit, really, somewhere else that I had never thought to look for inspiration. Like, to see how, obviously, I'd heard of Rembrandt lighting, but never actually connected the idea that it was from Rembrandt's paintings. That's how little my knowledge was. So it was really interesting to then look in that direction to see what you can take from there. Like, what is it that you like about that sort of thing? Can you replicate that sort of light or that sort of composition, I suppose, in your own work? And I know from style or individual style is a big thing that everyone seems to worry about. And I think like when you're getting all these different influences, different building blocks, that's pulling things from different areas. That's how you sort of try and build your own style, I suppose.
Right. Do you think it does? But I'm interested to hear your perspective on style. I guess first question: do you think that you have a style?
No.
Okay. Perfect. So then, do you think that style is manufactured? Do you create your style, or do you think that style just comes up naturally? There are two ways to bring home more money with your photography business. You either get more clients or you spend less of the money that you make. CloudSpot Studio helps you keep more of what you earn. With the lowest payment processing fees in the industry, the average photographer will save $300 annually. And that's just more money to invest in essential gear like a new flash or a sweet camera bag. You know, one that is perfect for storing all of the wedding day snacks that you can pack. But it's not just about savings. CloudSpot Studio is designed to streamline your workflow. Easily organize shoots, send contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and you're really going to enjoy the hassle-free payments. So sign up for a free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com. And as a bonus, you're going to get access to my exclusive wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires at no additional cost. Why let fees chip away at your profits? Empower your photo journey with CloudSpot and watch your business soar.
I think style should come from yourself. I think there's a big danger that's been spoken about by a lot of photographers. I think Dan Milner mentions it, like the influence of likes and Instagram. So if you get into it too early and start worrying about likes, you sort of only post images that you get likes. You're posting for other people, then you're making work for other people, and you're not really it's homogenizing everything rather than creating something different. And so in that respect, I think style could come from an external source, but I don't think then it's it's not going to be as strong because it's not coming from yourself then, really.
Oh.
I think you might have it for a bit, but then I think eventually it might be something that you come to look back on and think, well, this wasn't for me, or it could wear out if trends change on Instagram and what have you.
Yeah. It's funny. I was thinking back to my first wedding that I ever shot solo not too long ago. And I remember meeting with the couple, and I remember thinking, like, I have enough of an understanding of Lightroom on how to make things look different. So I asked the couple, I was like, what are your favorite colors? What are the colors of the wedding? And they told me it was like teal and purple or something like that. And I was like, okay. And I was like, do you want me to edit your photos in a way that would reflect, you know, your wedding colors? And they were like, absolutely, that'd be great. That would be absolutely wonderful. And I remember thinking, sweet, I got this. And I went to go edit all of their wedding photos. And at the time, I'm thinking to myself, this is awesome. I think this might be my thing. Like, I'll be able to do custom edits on every single wedding, you know, that I do, and tailor each wedding edit to the individual couple. And now I look back at those photos and they just look like dead zombies, you know, like the skin is green and the shadows are purple and it just doesn't look very good. So like, I totally understand, you know, where you're coming from there, where it's like, if you try to manufacture a style, it just comes off as inauthentic and it's not going to work. It's not going to be your own, no matter how hard you tried. And I think that like, if you want zombie looking photos, I think that I did a pretty good job, you know, but that doesn't mean that overall that the photos are good. So I get that. I got to think about that. You made me think about that. I like that. Where do you get your inspiration for photos?
At the moment, it's, I'm looking more at, portrait photographers rather than I did get like a small book on Caravaggio's artwork, but it's more words than pictures. So I'm like quickly looking through it to find the pictures to see how people are arranged, like the sort of expressions. And that's directly stolen from Rory Lewis's. He did a series of books with actors, not books, pictures with actors, where the inspiration was taken from famous pieces of art and then tried to recreate it with actors, sort of thing.
That's awesome.
So it's looking at and then recently black and white photography as well has become a real interest. There's a photographer who, again, that I should, if I'd had any sort of education or looked into the industry before, someone that I should have known about, called I think he's Dr. Andy Gotts.
Another one I'm not familiar with.
He's I think he was he's a celebrity photographer again, but his thing is that he doesn't retouch portraits, so it's all quite quite real. There's no like skin softening or that side of things. It's all very textured and emotional, I suppose. He's got some outstanding pictures of some great celebrities like Harrison Ford pulling funny faces, that sort of thing. Just stuff that you would never expect to see, and you would think, well, if you were to ask someone to do that, there's got to be a real level of trust, sort of thing, before someone would do that on camera. So it's really exploring more on that side of things. But for me, for my development, I think it's what one of the things I've still yet to do is ask a stranger for a portrait outside.
Yeah.
So it's just pushing myself to do things which are uncomfortable, I suppose, or different, and then to try and take lessons from there, either on how to interact with people or how to actually get the shot that a shot that looks good.
So let me ask you, because I remember you posted that that you took a little holiday. You wanted to go ask some people, like strangers, for their portraits. Didn't end up doing it. But, well, I guess, first of all, did you get a chance to? I feel like I remember seeing that you did finally find somebody to photograph. Is that right? Are you still working on that?
No, I'm still working on that.
Still working on that.
I've convinced myself every time, when I get spare time. Well, one of the downsides of trying to turn photography into a business at the same time as having a business is right. The amount of time to actually go out and take photographs has gone down to like 5% of the time that I used to have to do it.
Yes.
So at the moment, business-wise, my focus is all on learning about really interesting stuff about marketing and LinkedIn strategies, that sort of thing, right, rather than actually making good photographs. Because the way I look at it, if it's stuff that's not as fun to do, then it's probably more urgent to do it. So things like tax and book work, I figure it's the same with eating vegetables. If they tasted nice, they wouldn't be good for you. So if it's not fun, I should probably be doing more of it.
That's funny. Taxes are the vegetables of business. I love that. I'm gonna get that on a t-shirt. I'm gonna give you credit for that. I like that a lot. So I guess back to my question there. When you get the opportunity to get in front of somebody and say, hey, you know, I'm a photographer, I'd love to just take your portrait real quick right here. Is that something that like you plan out ahead of time? Like, do you have an idea for what you want the photo to be? Or for right now, is it just simply, here's somebody, let me just get the photo off real quick and then I'm done with this?
Something I picked up from another photographer is the importance of personal projects. Mm-hmm. Obviously, photography being a business, it is, people won't pay to do something that they don't see that you can already do.
Yeah.
So if it probably goes back to that working for free thing, like nobody should work for free, but obviously the only way that you're going to build an image portfolio is some sort of trade-off between your time and having someone stand there for you. So tying it into that, really. So I had the idea looking for, I suppose, a story, something that had a bit more of a story element to it rather than just something in isolation. So I had the idea for when I saw a thing up on Instagram, like pages that you might follow or you might know. One of them was for an American football team. You guys probably call it football, but
yes.
nearby, and it was fairly nearby, and it was a ladies' American football team, so it was a bit more of a novelty. So I got in touch with them through Instagram and explained who I was and would they be interested in any pictures for marketing and for trying to get new members and to keep their posts on social media. So they were quite keen on the idea, and I managed to go and photograph them the other week. Which was, again, something that I'd not done before, photographing sports. And I had the idea in my head that I would be able to turn up, take some pictures, then get some portraits with portable studio lighting. So something that looked very dramatic and and impressive.
Stylized, yeah. Yeah.
That sort of high-speed sync look, maybe. Because it's more of a novelty over here, obviously, to see the it has a sort of, I suppose, like a Hollywood glamour, the uniform, the helmets, that sort of thing. It's been a lot, yes, on a lot of TV shows, that sort of thing. So I had the idea to do that in my head, but then obviously going back to empathy and speaking to people, I realized that when I got there, this is not going to happen overnight. You can't really ask, offer to do something for someone, then immediately ask them to do something for you. It's going to be more of a. I think that came from listening to Vincent
Puglisi.
His interview with you, and then listening to his Total Life Freedom podcast about the way that you build things is by doing things for other people without looking to see what you can get from it, really.
Right.
So. That'll probably take a little while to come off. So, but it's all about doing stuff for other people. Then it actually increases the number of people that know you. So it has an indirect benefit anyway, even if it's not something that you're going out there for. So that was like one personal project. And then this one might be a trickier one to do. I want to start taking photographs of regulars in pubs.
Oh, really? But do you have to be a regular in a pub, like, to be able to recognize who the regulars are?
Well, customers, then, let's say. There's not as many regulars as there used to be.
Oh.
But we have a pub, so I have customers that come in, but I haven't quite figured out the dynamic of how you would actually ask them to do that, how you would actually logistically go about it, because you can't be dragging studio lighting around the pub. So there's a few things to figure out on that, but I think it's just like the idea of when you're trying to learn and to build things, it's no good waiting for things to happen. You have to sort of push things along in your own way.
Yeah.
So come up with ideas, look for inspiration, look for ideas from other sources. So obviously Jim's point about other Facebook groups, don't post in photography Facebook groups, post in family Facebook photo groups where people might actually be interested in your services or
right, yeah,
for whatever it is you're doing. So yeah, just working on them. I'm still intent on finding someone to a complete stranger to get a photograph of. It's just that every time I've been out recently, I've convinced myself that there's no one that looks has the right kind of face.
Oh, come on. Do you think that that's an excuse?
Rubbish.
Yeah, pretty sure I was going to say. I think that sounds like a bit of an excuse. I think that we can, you know, come up with. So I'll be honest. I did the same thing recently. Our family went to like it was like a beach town. And I remember walking around taking photos of this beach town. And I thought to myself, I was like, I'm going to find somebody and just ask them to take their portrait, like a very similar thing as you, I believe. And at the end of the day, you know, I kept telling myself, I found that I was telling myself the exact same things. Now, I photograph, like, you know, a fair amount of people, you know, I'm very comfortable with a camera, but there's something about asking somebody, it feels very private, you know, like to take somebody's photo and to ask just a random stranger essentially to do this private, intimate, you know, relationship act with you right there of, hey, like, can I get to know you enough to take a photo of you right here? It can be scary. It can be very scary. So I completely get that. I totally get that. If you could go back to 2016 and talk to 2016 John and say something about photography, what advice would you give him?
I would say start shooting in manual.
Right away.
Yeah, that would probably get you quicker results, I think. And also to actually do some research and try and learn something first. Look at the sort of resources that are around and get out there. And just to keep shooting, don't think that you've invested money in a camera, so it's too precious to take out and use all the time. You're only going to take out special occasions or something like that. Take it out all the time and just keep taking lots of pictures, and then just learn from them as you go. Find out what you like and just keep working on it.
That was beautiful. That was absolutely beautiful. I don't think we could end this any better than that, John. We are just about at the end of our time here. Before I let you go, you know what? Actually, I got one more question for you. You know, I know that you've been listening to the podcast for a while. I know that you've been part of the group for a while. I'm always interested to know, like, why, what is it about the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook community that you enjoy so much more over other Facebook groups or online forums?
I think it's the people that are in it. I think everyone's there for the same purpose, and everyone has a similar outlook. They understand that everyone is there to learn. It doesn't matter what stage you are. There's always someone that knows something that you don't know. It doesn't matter where you are, how long you've been shooting, or what you're shooting with. It's the fact that there's always someone there that can help you out, and people are more than happy to help you out with really useful advice. I think when I had my first job to go to this year, I said what I was thinking of charging, and I think someone said that sounded a little bit too low to them for what was involved. So I went back and doubled it, and still got the job. So.
Look
that was
at that.
That's probably the most useful bit of advice that I've ever had.
That's so perfect. Yeah. That is a direct help right there. So if anybody is new to the group and they were like worried about posting a photo for fear for the feedback that they would get, like what advice would you give them?
There was someone that I actually met photographing in Whitby last year, I think it was, and he decided to buy a camera when he retired, so he was still working out how to use it. It's taken some good pictures and getting the hang of it, but I have seen that he's joined the group now and started posting pictures, because I said to him that because I said I hope that you message him on Instagram, because his account's private, so he's obviously not ready not wanting to share his pictures, and said that I hope he's still shooting, that it's not put him off worrying that his pictures aren't as good as other people. And I said to him that this would be the group to come to find support and to get good feedback, not just people kicking you when you're down sort of thing.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm pretty sure that he's joined the group, because I've seen comments and I think he's posted. So yeah, that's great to see. And I think that just goes to show that the environment and the community that's built around it is a strong one that has the right values, really.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that. That's always so fun to hear, because I know how hard it can be when first getting started in photography. I remember, you know, being new to photography and not knowing where to turn whenever I had questions. So I appreciate that you found it helpful enough to tell somebody else. That is so awesome. John, my last question for you before I let you go is, I keep looking at the mailbox every single day for a piece of cheesecake in the mail, and nothing has shown up yet. So I'm hoping that it's going to be here soon. Is that right?
Definitely, yeah. You can't trust the post service.
Oh no, especially if it was that Biscoff cheesecake. Oh my gosh, that's my mailman probably ate it and just didn't leave it for me. John, before I let you go, where can people find or learn more about you and what it is that you shoot?
The best place to go is probably my website, which is johnkennyphotography.com, and then there's links to social media and then my other work on there, because one of the things that tips that came through I think when I was starting out was that you should have a niche for your photography. So if you're doing don't have pictures of people, landscape and cars, for example, all on the same website, or cake, for example, because it confuses people. So I ambitiously set up like 3 different Instagram accounts to keep stuff separate, thinking that I was going to keep taking photographs for all of them. So like one of them sort of not had any posts for a while. So yeah, the website's probably the best place, because it's got links to my main portrait website and then links to my landscape pictures as well. But yeah, if anyone's interested.
Perfect. Well, I'm going to put links in the show notes, of course. And you know, listeners I know can find you in the Facebook group as well. John, is there anything that maybe I didn't ask you today or anything like that you just want to make sure that people know or understand about photography?
I think just the importance of knowing that it's a learning process. Nobody starts off taking great pictures. Everyone's on the same journey. Everyone's at different stages. It doesn't matter what age you were. I mean, I'm 41 now, but I only started late. So just don't let anyone stop you doing it if you enjoy it, and just do it as much as possible.
Thank you for listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast. If you enjoy the show, consider leaving a review in iTunes. Keep shooting, and we'll see you next week.
I used to have a nickname at school, the robot, I think it was. Because sort of like, I didn't go into too much detail, but I think that there's an emotional aspect to photography as well. I'm not. I feel there's more emotion in the photographs, or I'm trying to put more emotion into photographs than. It's a good job we didn't go into this in the interview. Trying to communicate more emotion in photographs than I find it easier to talk about, I suppose.
Really?
I think it's been quite an important mental health thing, really. The being able to go out and take photographs, just being, I suppose it's like a mindfulness thing, particularly landscape photos, because you're out there on your own. You're taking your time. There's nobody else. Just more of a connection with the landscape. And we didn't want to go into pictures of taking pictures of people taking pictures.
Right.
Probably a good job we didn't go into that either. I don't know if you get this, actually. I was going to mention this at the beginning when you mentioned about taking photographs in New York. When you go somewhere with your camera, I don't know if it's just because the Nikon's a bit bulkier than the Fuji. When I was in Germany, like at this town in the Black Forest, like going around, and I'd stop, and my friend's not into photography, and he kept taking making jokes that I was crouching down every time I wanted to take a photograph, because that's like looking for a different angle sort of thing on the composition. And he started to notice that whenever I, like, people saw me kneeling down to take a picture of something, even though it was like maybe something a little abstract or just something I thought might be interesting with regards to light, he'd notice that people with other cameras would stop and start taking pictures of the same thing, even though,
really?
I think just because they must think he's got a big camera, he must know what he's doing. We should probably take a picture of that as well. I don't know if that ever happened, if that's like a common thing or not.
That's interesting. Well, did you notice people doing that? Or it wasn't until your buddy brought it up?
Yeah, because he would often be stood to one side thinking, come on, we've got to get going to the pub or something.
Yeah,
And then he would notice, like, after a while, like, people would be watching what I'm doing. And then, like, someone else would come up and do the same thing, like, look in the same direction, same thing.